Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics.
Sean Payton was horrible in clock management. That should never be the case with this New Orleans Saints team.
Well, we're waiting.
Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Welcome in to another edition of Drive Time Sports. Live from the Auto Farm Studios, Jordan Buscarini alongside Travis Anderson for this Friday edition of the show. And I think we're going to have a fun one. A lot of coaching talk has gone on here over the last week on Drive Time Sports. And we are going to continue that today. We're going to be joined by USU Eastern Vice President Greg Dart in just a few moments. He's going to join us to talk about the coaching search for men's basketball at USU Eastern. That job opened up just last night, and already a great deal of excitement and interest surrounding that job. So we're going to be joined by Greg Dart here in just a moment. He'll go over the logistics and what the school is looking for in their next men's basketball coach. Also on the show today, we're going to be joined by Ron Wotus. If you don't recognize the name, you certainly will once the conversation begins. He's the longest tenured coach in Major League Baseball, right now serving as a third base coach for the San Francisco Giants, and he's been in that position since Dusty Baker was the manager. In fact, he also spent some time in the minor leagues as well, three-time World Series champ. Ron Wotus will join us. I'm looking forward to that conversation. And with that being said, Travis, we're to the end of the week, another week without any sports, but that doesn't mean that there's no news floating around the national sports front. Let's start with the NBA, and today we get the class for the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame, and it does include the late, great Kobe Bryant. It's a rather bittersweet day, right? So the class, which obviously is going to be headlined by Kobe, Kobe's not here to get his call from the Hall of Fame. And
which sucked.
To say the least. Yeah, we're talking about one of the greatest basketball players to ever live.
Top five.
There's no question he's top five. I know there's been a lot of talk going on around social media about that this week. Just stop. I mean, he's obviously a top five basketball player of all time. Just stop. Obviously, Kobe's going to be the headliner. He's going to be joined by Tim Duncan and Kevin Garnett. And really, when you take a look at the NBA class, it's going to be tough to top that.
That's one of the greatest, if not the greatest, class going in. Like you said, Garnett, Duncan, and the late, great Kobe Bryant.
A trio that combined for 11 NBA championships. Kobe with five, Duncan with five, Garnett with one. Four MVP awards across those three careers. Garnett obviously played a large chunk of his career with the Minnesota Timberwolves and then went on to win a championship with the Boston Celtics. Finished things off with the Brooklyn Nets. Tim Duncan played his entire career with the San Antonio Spurs, and Kobe Bryant played his entire career with the Los Angeles Lakers. And I hope that that is at least something that gets a little bit of attention when these guys officially become members of the Hall of Fame. Because, Travis, in today's realm, I can almost assure you we will not see guys spend 20 years with one team anymore. Max contracts become shorter and shorter with every CBA. The lack of loyalty, not only from an organization standpoint, but also from a player standpoint, truly exists.
Yeah, players nowadays, they don't care about that stuff. They don't care about, you know, spending careers as just one team.
I don't think organizations care about it.
Yeah, the same way, because, you know, the organization has to look at it as, well, money-wise, maybe we don't want this player around, so we have to look in other ways. So, yeah, it goes both ways.
Duncan spent 19 years with the Spurs. Kobe spent 20 with the Lakers. 39 years combined, these two teams played in the NBA over the course of two
teams. And now Duncan coaches there, so you see that he transitioned, he just moved to the bench. That's even cooler.
And I think at some point in time, Kobe would have had a role with the Los Angeles Lakers. Jeannie Buss has been very vocal in saying that that was ultimately her goal. So to me, this is historical. Okay, now Garnett, it's a bit more complicated, but look, the Minnesota Timberwolves, they took care of Kevin Garnett. I don't know if Boston took care of him when Danny Ainge moved on and sent him to Brooklyn.
And Garnett's bitter towards the Timberwolves.
As he should.
And, you know, he said if, you know, they don't pick or whatever, but he said he's going in as a Celtic.
And then Kobe and Garnett played each other twice in the NBA Finals, splitting those two final appearances. Yeah, this is a very historical Hall of Fame class. And next week, I want to spend time dissecting these three players' career. Everybody knows about Kobe Bryant. Won an MVP, got robbed out of several others. I do believe there was a conspiracy in some form there to monitor. Yeah, it was. It was media-driven to monitor the amount of success or accolades that Kobe's career had. And look, there's proof behind that. Tim Duncan, to me, is the greatest power forward to ever play the game of basketball. And I think Kevin Garnett is someone that you could absolutely put in the conversation for his particular position. Now, outside of those three, Barbara Stevens and Eddie Sutton, Kim Mulkey, and Rudy Tomjanovich and Tamika Catchings. Those names are also going in with Kobe, Duncan, and Garnett. The entire class is going to be revealed tomorrow. And then typically the enshrinement's in August. Again, it's a little bit different than, say, the Pro Football Hall of Fame. It's a little bit different than Cooperstown. You'll see a lot of names mixed with superstar players like
Kobe, Duncan, Garnett. Because the NBA doesn't have their own. Yeah,
it's not. It's the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. So a great class nonetheless. It's led by three guys that absolutely deserve it. It's as star-studded as you could possibly get. Let's move on from the NBA. And if we have time, maybe we can dive into this a little bit later on in the show. This is absolutely ridiculous, and I'm glad. A federal judge in New York dismissed a class action lawsuit that was brought on against Major League Baseball by a group of fantasy sports players who claim to have been harmed by the Astros and Red Sox sign-stealing scandals. It was a 32-page opinion that was issued by the U.S. District Judge, lambasted the Astros and the Red Sox for breaking baseball rules, but fortunately they threw this out. How insane is it that fantasy players believe that they were affected more so than the players, management, personnel in Major League Baseball? Class action lawsuit for this? Get out of here.
It's dumb. It's one of the dumbest things that I've heard you read off to me in quite some time.
It's ridiculous. Class action lawsuit thrown out by a judge. Thank goodness. Fantasy players. I love fantasy baseball. I play it every year. But come on.
You're not going to sue them?
No. Absolutely not. Look, I have no bearing over what happens in Major League Baseball. I could be upset about the cheating scandal. Right, as a season ticket holder, maybe you can be upset about the cheating scandal. As a fantasy baseball player?
No. Come on.
It's a cash grab, a potential cash grab.
Yeah, like you said, cash grab. Boring times will make you go insane.
Let's pause for just a moment. Local sports update is coming up. Plus, we're going to be joined by Greg Dart of USU Eastern. It's a Friday edition of Drive Time Sports, and we're back right after this.
Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM, the play-by-play home of the USU Eastern Eagles.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Farm Studios, right here on 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. We've had a lot of coaching talk throughout the week. We've been joined by all three athletic directors at Carbon, Emory, and Pinnacle. We had the news yesterday of assistant coach Ray Jones from USU Eastern moving on to Pinnacle. And today we're going to talk about a new coaching job opening at USU Eastern for the men's basketball program. And joining us right now to talk about that, we have Greg Dart, vice president at USU Eastern. And Greg, it is always a pleasure. I appreciate the time again.
Just glad to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Definitely. Hopefully you're staying safe. Family stayed safe during this crazy time.
Yes. As many people on our campus are working from home, I've been splitting time between office and home, but it's a ghost town on campus as we've moved more and more people remote.
It has a feel of summer, doesn't it?
It does. It's quieter than any summer I've ever been there.
Well, I know it's going to be a very big spring/summer for USU Eastern Athletics, particularly on the men's basketball side of things. Coach Vando no longer in that position, and now the search begins for a new head coach.
Yeah, and the search is right in its infancy. It was just posted yesterday on our website, jobs.usu.edu, and we are right in the middle of a nationwide search for a new head men's basketball coach. The first time that we've been in this position in 8 years, and we wish Coach Vando the best in his next endeavors, and then Coach Jones, as you said, moving on to Pinnacle, and we couldn't be more excited for him. And now's the time for the next stage in this program that's got a lot of history and a lot of upside.
When you say a nationwide search, I want you to make sure you clarify for the listeners the amount of excitement and the amount of interest that you guys receive from coaching candidates. It's not as if it's three or four people applying. We're talking about hundreds and hundreds of applications from all over the country. It's a very competitive field. When a JUCO job opens up, specifically at the D1 JUCO level, it's a big deal.
Yeah, and even more at the D1 JUCO level in this conference. Mm-hmm. I think when people look across the country and they look at the Scenic West Athletic Conference on the junior college level, there's a lot of interest from all levels of basketball. You'll have everything from Division I assistants to Division II, Division III coaches, NAIA, other junior college coaches. So you'll have people from all over that are going to be really interested in this job. And I think it's going to be several hundred applicants. In less than 2 days since it's become clear that this position would be open, we've had over 80 people who have contacted us and expressed interest. And now that the position's open, we anticipate that we're going to have a lot of different applicants from all over the country. Some that have coached in this conference, some that have coached locally, some that are I have never set foot in Price, Utah, that know enough about what's going on here and in this conference that they're interested in this job.
So you won't have to sell this job to anybody. We know that.
No, and for multiple reasons. I think that the conference that we're in is a big piece of that. But I think the type of institution that Utah State University Eastern is appealing beyond what almost any junior college in the nation is. We are able to attract players who are very interested on the academic side that want a university experience. We're one of the few junior college athletic programs that's attached to a university. And so you'll have these students who are able to be in a university program competing on the junior college level and not having to sacrifice anything academically for what they want to do athletically. That is something that is unique, and that alone, coaches understand that. They understand what that means as far as potential recruits for this campus.
Again, we're being joined right now by Greg Dart of USU Eastern as we talk about a job opening, the men's basketball job, and as Greg alluded to, it is open right now. So, Greg, the question I have for you, 8 years is a very long time, and I know if you go before that, we had a really set of unfortunate circumstances that opened the job up when Coach Vando received it with the untimely passing of Coach Barton. So, and he was an assistant to Coach Craig, so it's not as if this position has really been open for a long time, which is a great thing, right? There's always been continuity. But with that being said, is there something in specifically that you guys will be looking for as the next head coach?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. There's really three things that I've identified, and you'd have to ask that question to our athletic director, Scott Madsen, as well. He might have a different list than me, but as far as my list, I think there's three things. And one is somebody who is a community supporter, understands community basketball. First and foremost, this institution is a big part of the Carbon County and Carbon Emory community. And we need a coach, just like Coach Vando has, that understands the importance of that, understands what it means to develop a program that the community can be proud of and the community can support. Number two, I think we're looking for someone who brings a positive energy. Student athletes are changing every year, I think. And right now, when I look across the landscape of student athletes, what they're looking for is they're looking for that positive energy coach. They don't want Bobby Knight walking through the door and throwing a chair at them. they want someone who can help them to develop. They want that person that can help them that way. And then third, I think this is vitally important if you're going to be successful on the court, and that's recruiting. We have some recruiting advantages that I don't think any other junior college in the nation has. One being, like I said, our academic situation. There are some recruiting disadvantages. There are certain student athletes that don't want to be in a small town. We don't want a student athlete if they don't want to be in a small town, because those are the student athletes that can be a problem when they do come to a small town. So somebody who can recruit being that third piece. And I think we'll find a wide variety of coaches that meet all three of those and then bring a lot of other things as well.
I always find it interesting when you have a pool of a variety of different kind of coaches. And I know you've mentioned some that have coached in this conference. You've talked about more than likely, I'm sure you'll see some candidates that are fresh out of high, or fresh from the high school game as well, which plays an important role, right? You have to know connections if you're coming from the high school level as well, or maybe some old-time coaches that have coached D1. I think when you have a pool of that many people, it's got to be fun and exciting.
It is. It is also something that, you know, is just really kind of nerve-wracking when you're going through that many. I think everybody, you know, as you look across the country and you saw this movement in the NFL over the last few years, you saw this kind of youth movement. Who is mm-hmm. going to be the next great young coach? And you've seen some really successful coaches that way. That's always intriguing. Catch that lightning in the bottle, up and comer coach that maybe has been at the high school level, maybe who's been just young and not quite the same experience, but is going to be the next great coach. You then look at the coaches who might know this conference really well, who might have been assistant in another institution or tied to our program or, you know, whatever, and understand the grueling nature of what this conference basketball means. And then you look at, oh, man, and then you've got these seasoned coaches that have, they might have been a head coach at a D1 institution, the pinnacle of college basketball, and they're interested in coaching here in Price, Utah. That's exciting. And so when you start looking at all the different types of coaches that we'll hear from, I expect to see lots of applicants in each of those categories. And so do I think this will be an easy choice? I don't think so at all. But I think when it's all said and done, we will have a lot of really, really qualified applicants that can do amazing things for this program and maybe even more importantly for this community.
Yeah, and there is pressure that goes along with that, right? Because when you take a look at the athletics department in itself, men's basketball, it's extremely important for men's basketball to be successful for all of the other sports as well, right? There's a direct correlation here.
Absolutely. And if you look at what's happened with our athletic department over the last couple of years, and you've seen just kind of this rising tide, we were 1 point away from being in the national tournament with our volleyball team this year.
Yeah.
Our women's basketball team was tied for the conference championship and had the coach of the year. You see these things happening. Those things are great. If men's basketball, which is if athletics is the front door to the institution, men's basketball is the front door to athletics. If that's successful, it just raises everything else.
Now, with this being said, I do want to step away from the coaching side for just a tad bit. Don't want to throw any curveballs at you, but I know that there has been some rumored of expansion within the conference as of late. This does matter, right, as far as the men's basketball program is concerned. Where are we at in that regard right now?
Yeah, so probably the biggest challenge with this conference has been the number of teams. That we have five that compete in basketball this year. Starting next year, we will have six, in that the College of Southern Nevada will launch men's and women's basketball starting fall of this year. They've hired coaches, they're recruiting athletes, and so we'll have six teams. We have a few others that probably aren't too far behind. Truckee Meadows Community College has started soccer, and they're looking in Reno, and they're looking at basketball as a potential. There are others that are in our geographic footprint that could be looking at basketball within the next 3 to 5 years as well. And so we've had the quality, but we've had a shrinking quantity. I think you'll see that expanding, I know, this fall and then again after that.
So that will obviously change scheduling as well, which is a big disadvantage. I mean, when you got to play a team four times, which is exactly what we had to do this past year in seeing Colorado, right, in the opening round, had to play Colorado four times. The girls, they had to play CSI four times, right? That matters. And so I would assume that schedule shrinks a little bit, which in the same sense could reduce travel. I mean, is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, it is. It is a fair assessment. So yes, they've played three times during the regular season with additional schools that could be reduced to two. The problems with three are myriad of problems, including the fact that you're unbalanced with that every year. Mm-hmm. You either have two at home or you have two on the road. If we can get down to two, that will be something that every coach in the conference is very happy about. And then if you do meet in the tournament, that'll be your third time instead of your fourth time. It changes the competitive dynamics a little bit, which is a very welcome change for everybody. And the potential for lessening travel too is there.
Greg, we're going to end with this. Jumping back over to the men's basketball job, do you guys have a specific time frame in place? I know things are crazy right now with everything that's going on, and still, April is a little late to not have a men's basketball coach. So is there a time frame put in place even with the craziness going on right now?
Yeah, so the position posted just yesterday, and we'll be running for 2 weeks. So about the 14th of April, we'll be reviewing those applicants, and we hope to move very quickly. One disadvantage to running a search right now is that that the university has still limited travel through May 1st, and so we couldn't bring people to campus or go to visit them. So a lot of this is going to have to be done virtually. That's a disadvantage in them getting to know us getting to know those coaching candidates. One advantage, though, is that it can speed things up. So I anticipate that that during the month of April, we'll be naming our next head men's basketball coach.
Well, I look forward to that news. Again, Greg Dart of USU Eastern joining us right now to talk about the men's basketball job. Greg, thank you so much for taking out the time to join us.
Thanks so much for having me, Jordan.
We're going to break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. We're going to move over to the national side of things. We're going to be joined by Ron Wotus. Ron Wotus is the longest tenured coach in Major League Baseball. I'm sure he's got some fun stories for us. That's coming up next when we return right here on Drive Time Sports.
Pitch to Bellinger. He swings and he hits a high fly ball right center field. This ball's gone!
Now a 3-1 for Acuna. Swinging a high fly ball! Deep to left field! Way, way back! It's gone!
Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Still got that itch for Major League Baseball. Unfortunately, I don't think we're getting any games anytime soon. We're going to try to scratch that itch right now with our next guest. He is the longest tenured coach in Major League Baseball, Ron Wotus. Three-time World Series champion with the San Francisco Giants, and he's actually been a part of that bench squad since 1997 when he took over underneath Dusty Baker. He's joining us right now over the phone. Ron, a pleasure to get you on the show today. Thank you so much for the time.
Jordan, it's nice to be with you today.
Yeah, as I mentioned, one of the longest tenured coaches in Major League Baseball, or are you the longest tenured coach right now?
Yeah, you know, I know Glenn Hoffman's been around a long time. I have him maybe by a year, I think, in the big leagues. But there's another coach, Dave McKay, who's with Arizona, who's been doing it longer than I have. But I think he might have been out of a job for a year or two, and he started off with Tony La Russa, who's a Northern California guy. And Dave McKay has been with Tony La Russa from the very beginning. And, you know, now La Russa retired. He ended up landing a job with the Arizona Diamondbacks. So he's their first base coach, and he's living at home. And he's probably the senior most longest amount of years in the major leagues, probably next to me.
It's fantastic. And I want to talk about your coaching career because obviously it goes way, way back. In fact, before you actually made the jump to the Giants, you actually served as a manager in the minor leagues, correct? And I believe that you were also manager of the year at one particular time.
Yeah. You know, when I was getting ready to, well, when I was done playing, you know, I had a couple offers. I was back in AAA. You know, I was drafted and played for the Pittsburgh Pirates most of my career, got parts of three seasons with them, retired as a player, and I took a coaching job with the San Francisco Giants. I played my last 2 years at AAA with them. And I had some minor league opportunities to go play for the Mets and another team. And I had a chance to go to Italy and play. And I said, I'm going to make a career change. So I started managing in the minor leagues. And, there was 2 years. I was fortunate. I had good clubs. I had manager of the year two times there. My last 2 years was in Phoenix with the Phoenix Firebirds. And I know you're out there in Salt Lake. And I actually manage against your Salt Lake club there when the Minnesota Twins were in town.
That's fantastic. So you've definitely been well-traveled. Let me ask you this, Ron. What's the biggest adjustment you have to make between being a player and then transitioning into the coach? I mean, what was the most difficult transition for you?
Well, I think that, when you're a player, you worry about yourself. You know, you can control everything that you have to do, your work, your attitude, your approach. But now when you're managing or coaching, You have to worry about 25 guys. And, you know, the days of, you know, the players all conforming to the coach or the manager are long gone. It's more that the manager or the coach has to adjust to the 25 guys on his roster. And it takes some time and experience to realize that that's a big part of it, you know. So it's an adjustment on how you think and how you want to help other players, because, you know, when you're just worried about yourself, if you want to take extra ground balls or you want to hit more or whatever it is, you can do it. But, you know, not all the players are on the same program as you are, and you got to find a way to help them the best you can with their attitudes and their approaches.
Well, let's talk about your Giants career, specifically as third base coach. So you make that leap, correct, in 1998 under Dusty Baker. And from that point on, boy, you've been a part of some really fascinating, some really fantastic teams in San Francisco.
Yeah, very fortunate. So 98, I was called up from Phoenix. I became the third base coach in 98 and the infield coach. And then in 99, Dusty moved me to the bench coach. And I stayed as the bench coach with the San Francisco Giants for 19 seasons. And it wasn't until 2017, we had lost 98 games in San Francisco. We had some of our coaches were let go. We kind of had a big revamping of the whole thing, and they asked me if I would coach third base. So I've been back out at third base the last two seasons, and that was the first time since 98. But to your point, we've been very fortunate. We've been the four World Series, and we won three of them. The one we lost was in 2002 against the Anaheim Angels.
Let's start with that particular World Series, because it was a battle. I mean, it goes seven games, and this is the same season that Barry Bonds, I believe he wins back-to-back MVPs, if I'm not mistaken. So if you go back to 2002, I mean, just a fascinating season all the way across, and you go seven games against the Angels. What's that like, a grueling seven-game World Series, especially one that ends in a loss?
Yeah, no, it was a tough series. I mean, the Angels were scoring all kinds of runs that year, and we actually were up 3-2 and heading back down to Anaheim for games 6 and 7, and we actually had a 5-2 lead in the seventh inning in game 6, and anyways, long story short, they come back to win that game, and then in game 7 they beat us. So it was tough, and I think the whole Bay Area, myself, the players, it was a tough pill to swallow to go into a game 7 and not win it. And I'll tell you what won it for them was that darn monkey they have down there in Anaheim, which yeah. Show up on the scoreboard and get the fans going. They had a good team, and we just couldn't hold them down, and they won that World Series. But it was a battle, and it was great for the Giants, because it's the first time they've been to the World Series in a long, long time. And you know, it was a transition, because that following year, Dusty Baker was our manager. He did not renew his contract after going to the World Series. He went to the Chicago Cubs. I had to make a decision to go with him or stay here in San Francisco. I ended up staying San Francisco, and it's been the right decision for me, because I've been here ever since.
Yeah, it doesn't take too long for you guys to get back to the World Series, right? 7 or 8 seasons. You get back, you win a World Series against the Texas Rangers. We just talked about the pain of losing a 7-game World Series to the Angels. What's it like when you finally climb that mountain? You take care of the Rangers in 5 games in 2010.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. You know, it was been, you know, since 50, I think 54 that the Giants had won a World Series. They hadn't won a World Series on the West Coast since they moved from New York when they made that transition. So this city just went bonkers. And as a player, a coach, manager, you know, it's a feeling of such accomplishment when you win that last game. And, you know, the whole winter it carries for you. You know, it's a great feeling to have won, but you find that all winter long, you're sleeping better, you're eating better, you just have a smile on your face, and you can't believe that you won. And then to go on and do it 2 more times in 12 and 14, I still shake my head on how we were able to accomplish that, because we were never a juggernaut on paper. I mean, you know, we played good ball at the right time, which definitely was deserving. But winning is so fleeting, like it was in 2002. You know, a blue pit, anything can go wrong, and usually you're on the short end of the stick. Something happens where you don't win a game, and you don't win, you know, you don't get to the playoffs, or you don't win the World Series. So to do it three times in that span is just unbelievable.
I know if we talk 2012, you had two series go to the brink, right? It was a 5-game set with the Reds and a 7-game set with the Cardinals before an ultimate sweep against the Tigers. And then in 2014, we're talking about a 7-game World Series, and this time you come out on top against the Royals. That's some remarkable baseball, some really gripping on the edge of your seat baseball.
Yeah, I think to do it in 2012 was really we were against all odds, because we were down 2-0 in the first round of the playoffs to Cincinnati, and we had Barry Zito going on the mound in the third game, and Cincinnati had not, this was at home, we were down. Then we went to Cincinnati. So we lost two in San Francisco. Now we go to Cincinnati to play three more. You know, it was a 3-5 series. And Cincinnati had not been swept at home all year. Well, long story short, we end up winning that game. We end up coming back, win three in a row, and beat them. And then we were down 3-1 against St. Louis Cardinals in that league championship series. And we came back to win three straight. To win, we had six, you know, elimination games that we were able to win every one of them. And then, of course, we went to the World Series and we swept the Tigers. So go figure. The World Series was easier than getting there.
Again, our guest right now is Ron Wotus, one of the longest tenured coaches in Major League Baseball, right now serving as a coach for the San Francisco Giants. Ron, with all that being said, you've had the opportunity to be around some really unique players. I mean, I would definitely be doing the listeners a disservice when I ask you, if I didn't ask you, what was so special about Barry Bonds, who in my mind is probably the most feared hitter we've ever seen?
Yeah, Jordan, no question about it. He's the best player I've ever been around. You know, I was fortunate to play with Barry in AAA when I was back with the Pirates. I was older than him, and he was coming up. We spent a half a season together, and you knew right then and there that he was extremely talented. If you would have told me back then that he would be the home run king and accomplish what he did, I could have never seen that coming. But you know, he was, and you know, he's much maligned for a lot of reasons and all that, but he's as dedicated as a player that I've ever seen. He was religious in his workouts and his approach to the game. Whenever he set his mind to anything, he accomplished it. And what people don't realize, he had physical ability, but he had mental know-how and toughness that's really at the top level of great athletes. And that really makes players in the major leagues. You know, the talent takes you so far, but your mental approach and your mental capacity. And talking about his hitting, he had the shortest swing and the most disciplined knowledge of the strike zone. He did not leave the strike zone. And, of course, as he got stronger over the years and hit those home runs, it just shows how great he was. And one year he walked over 200 times, and I could go on and on with stories about Barry Bonds, but he certainly mentally and physically is the best I've ever seen.
Now, Ron, I asked you a question before we hopped on the air about an interesting story, and you mentioned one with the Los Angeles Dodgers that involves Tim Lincecum, who, again, was just outstanding in the middle of his prime. And with me being a Dodger fan, again, my ears perked right up. A very interesting story about where you were basically forced into the manager role because Bruce Bochy was tossed. I love this story.
Yeah, you know, being the bench coach, when the manager's tossed, you take over. And that's back before video replay, right? So managers don't get tossed anymore. And because the video replay, there's not as much reasons to get thrown out when they mess up a call. But in this particular game, Lincecum was in his prime. We're winning 1-0. I think Boach got let go, got thrown out in the third inning. Gary Darling was the first base coach. He made two terrible calls in the game, almost cost us the game. And anyways, Boach is gone, so I'm managing the rest of the way. And, you know, I had my feet up on the rail because Lincecum is just cruising. He's dominating. He must have 14 or 15 strikeouts. Now it's the top of the ninth. packed house Dodgers, our rival. And I can't remember the hitter, but it was a ground ball. Umpire calls him safe at first, Gary Darling, his third missed call. And I said, oh, the heck with it. I mean, you know, Lincecum's in full control. He had like 80 pitches. So I run out there. I get tossed from the game. So now the manager's gone, the bench coach is gone, and I hand the lineup card to Tim Flannery, who was our third base coach. So now he's got to manage the game. They end up tying the game in the ninth. That leadoff single, you know, tied the game. Lincecum goes, I think, 9 or 10 innings. He leaves the game. We put other pitchers in. And meanwhile, Boach is trying to help Flannery manage the game from the tunnel, right? He's down in the tunnel trying to give him information. That's difficult to do because, you know, the communication, and you got to be thinking ahead on what you want to do. Anyways, Boach wants Flannery to pinch hit for Juan Uribe, and he doesn't. He didn't get the message quick enough. Uribe comes up, hits a home run. We win the game, like in the 14th inning. So we all go in. We're all happy. Everybody's excited. Flannery's exhausted, and Boach calls Flannery, and he goes, Flann, he goes, you got to listen to me. I wanted you to do this. I wanted you to do that. You didn't listen. And he goes, that's a problem. You got to listen. And Flann looks at him, and he says, Boach, the problem is, when I woke up this morning at 8 a.m., I didn't think I'd be managing the game against the Los Angeles Dodgers. And that was a great point. So he was the third down on the list, and he ended up getting credited for the win.
There's no doubt that Bruce Bochy's on his way to the Hall of Fame, right? I mean, we're talking about one of the best that we have seen in quite some time. What was it like serving under Bochy?
Oh, it's been great. I've been really fortunate with, you know, Dusty Baker for 5 years and Felipe Alou for 5 years and Bruce Bochy. I think we spent 11 years together. You know, he was really an old school manager, a player's manager. He's not a man of many words. You know, he kind of leads the old school way. You know, he had managers, tough guys in the past that he had played for, and he took a lot from them, the Bill Verdon type guys. And anyways, but it was a lot of fun. I mean, to have success that we had, just unbelievable, and we were a close-knit group, not just with Boach, but all the coaches. And whenever you have success like that as a group, they're some of the best days of your professional career.
Now, Ron, one more question before I let you go. And we have this conversation with Bill Lasky, a great friend of the show, each week when we talk about analytics in baseball. And I know that at times you've been responsible for defensive shifts. I'm curious as to your thoughts in analytics and the way the game is played today, or maybe the way that the game is moving compared to where it was at when you first started taking over as the third base coach.
Yeah, well, it's changed so much. I mean, you know, if you got another hour, I can get into it a little bit, but I'll keep it as brief as I can. You know, when I first started, we were using VH tapes to look at other teams' games, you know, to scout them on top of our advanced scouts. Well, today there's no advanced scouts. Everything's done in-house on the computers by analysts. And I'll just say this. I think the analytics has brought a dynamic to the game that is very positive. But I really believe you need the blend of the analytics and people with the baseball instincts that have played and understand the human element. See, the problem with statistics are they don't have all the variables in a game. So you can tell me whether it's in hitting or defensing somebody on the shift. You could say, well, the percentages tell you to do this. But you don't know how that hitter is swinging that day. You don't know about the pitcher on the mound. So we have more variables and more detailed information over the analytics when you get in the moment in the game, you know. And I think that's the biggest discrepancy between the analytics and the people that have been on the field and have played the game and have a feel for these moments and all these other variables. It's hard to discount those because you live them. And I live them. The analytics help us today. I mean, it helps in defensing, guys, for sure. Look at all the outs people are making, the shift. People can't hit the ball through the shift. They're pitching better to the hitter's weaknesses. So there's a lot of positives, but it is a bit of adjustment. And I think it's gone, you know, to 80 to 90% analytics and 10% feel and all the other variables in today's game.
I've always been of the mindset that there is way too many variables to predict with the computer or with just sheer numbers, right? I mean, honestly, I think you hit it right on the head, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here. There's really no way to judge, A, what a pitcher's feeling at this particular moment, B, what a batter's feeling at this particular moment, or maybe if we even take a look at position players as well, there is an element to it that will never be able to be deciphered through numbers in a computer.
No, you're exactly right. You know, I set the defense and set the shifts for my whole time that I was the bench coach here and the infield coach. And you're exactly right. I mean, if we got a guy throwing 95 down and away as hard as he can, and, you know, he's pulling everything, and a guy can really locate, you might not be able to have to shift on that guy. I mean, that's the simplest example that I can give you. And we're just not looking at plots. Okay, so if you just look at the statistic and look at pots, and, you know, our analysts would give me the maps and say, okay, we want to do this, but I'd watch video. I'd watch every day the last 2 weeks of the swings by the player, because players make adjustments. Are they going to hit the ball the other way? As I said, you got to get throwing 95 down and away, and we're going to pitch him away. If we're going to pitch him soft or we're going to pitch him in, okay, he's going to pull it as a lefty. So there's so many other variables that you have to put in there. So you got to blend the two, and you still got to look at video if you want to be the best at what you're doing with all the information that's available.
Ron Wotus, again, coach for the San Francisco Giants. Ron, I've really enjoyed the conversation over the last 15, 20 minutes. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day, and hopefully we get some baseball relatively soon.
Yeah, that'd be nice. I just hopefully we can get this this virus under control so we can play baseball, but more importantly, we can all go back to work and go back to our great style of living that we have. And Jordan, I enjoyed being with you, so give me a call anytime.
Well, thank you very much, Ron. Again, that's Ron Wotus, third base coach for the San Francisco Giants. Fun conversation about the game of baseball, and I promise next week we're going to have more fun baseball conversations. We are, however, out of time on this edition of the show. Again, I want to thank Ron Wotus and also Greg Dart for taking out the time to join us. We'll be back to do it again on Monday. Be safe. We're out.
Serving all of Eastern Utah, this is News Talk 107.3 FM and 750 AM, KOAL. Price.